Billy Gatsby, the youngest of Bill Pike's band of raiders, was real lucky. He'd been given the sentry post that was partially sheltered by a large group of boulders and was back up against the side of a hillock, so most of the north wind was blocked. Still, he was about as cold as he could ever remember being, in spite of the fact that he had on 3 shirts and a heavy coat over his long handles.
Don't know why Bill thinks we have to stand sentry duty way out here in the mountains. Ugh. Ain't nobody within 50 miles gonna be crazy enough to be out in this storm time of night.
He, like Sam Kane, had filled his canteen with coffee, but he'd been smarter than Kane. When Bill wasn't looking, he'd added a generous measure of rye whiskey to the canteen before filling it with coffee. His coffee wasn't as warm as Kane's was, but it packed a hell of a lot more of a kick than Kane's did. The night was only half over, and Billy had already just about emptied the canteen.
Oh, yeah.
As he took the last swallow, he debated whether he ought to go on back over to the fire and fill it up again with the coffee that had been left warming. He shook his head and clamped his jaw tight.
Well, no, better not do that.
Bill would have a fit if he left his position just to get some coffee. Not that he was afraid of Bill Pike. Billy was young and dumb enough not to be afraid of anybody. But he figured there was no need of pissing Pike off when they stood to make such a good payday off this Jensen fella. He wriggled his toes inside his boots, wishing he'd put on an extra pair of socks. He could barely feel his feet, and they were beginning to burn. Wondering if they were maybe getting frostbitten, he decided to walk around a little bit to get the blood flowing. Slapping his arms against his chest, he stepped out from his sheltered place among the boulders and almost ran into a shadowy figure standing just around the corner. He grinned for a moment, thinking at first it was Bill Pike coming to check on him, and then he realized this man was much bigger than anyone in their group.
Oh, son of a bitch!
When Smoke got back to the horses, carrying Billy Gatsby over his shoulder, he found Cal and Pearly sitting on the ground sheets in front of an unconscious man propped up against a boulder in a copse of pine trees.
Did you have any trouble?
Nah, this one was too busy drinking whiskey to be paying attention to what he was doing.
Rub a little snow on their faces and see if you can wake them up.
As Cal began to rub snow on the men's faces, he looked back over his shoulder at Smoke.
Chimney Smoke, this one's jaw looks like it's broken. What'd you hit him with?
My fist.
Well, I guess that was enough, I guess.
A few minutes later, both men came awake.
You boys know who I am.
Kane's eyes narrowed and he shook his head.
Nope. Never seen you before in my life.
I'm Smoke Jensen. That's my wife you men kidnapped. And it was my hands you killed at my ranch.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Boys, we can do this one of two ways. The harder way or the easy way. And trust me, you don't want to know what the hard way is.
All right. What do you want to know?
First, why did your leader pick my ranch to raid?
He found a wanted poster on you up in Utah. Offered a $10,000 reward for you dead or alive.
That poster's over 10 years old. There isn't any price on my head anymore.
Kane glanced at Billy, lying next to him, his eyes puzzled.
And why would he do all this?
Tell me the names of all the gang.
After Kane told him, Smoke nodded.
This Zeke Thompson. He ain't akin to Pike?
I reckon so. They got the same mother.
Does he have a bum leg?
Yeah, his arm's messed up too.
Smoke looked at Cal and Pearly.
Just as I thought. Pike and Thompson are after me because I killed their brother up in Utah a while back. I shot up Thompson but left him alive. My mistake, I guess.
How about Miss Sally, pond scum? You bastards hurt her in any way?
No, I swear we haven't. Bill said we couldn't do nothing to her till he had Jensen prisoner. And he was gonna make you watch what he did.
I hope you're telling me the truth, mister.
Ask Billy if you don't believe me.
In that case, I'm gonna let you live for a while.
What do you mean?
I'm gonna take you up to the mountains a ways and let you go.
What do you mean, let us go? You mean with no horses or nothing?
That's right. If you're smart and careful, you just might be able to survive until you can find some miners who'll take mercy on you. I'll leave you with a knife so you can cut some trees for shelter, but that's about it. But
we'll freeze to death up there.
At least you'll have a chance to live. That's more than you gave the men you killed at my ranch. Pearlie, put him on your horse. I'll take him a couple of miles up that mountain and then I'll meet you back here.
Pearlie put his skinning knife away and walked over to where the two men were propped up against the boulder. He bent over to reach down and help Billy Gatsby to his feet. Just as Pearlie straightened up with the young man in his arms, Sam Kane jumped to his feet, drawing a long knife with a skinny blade from his boot. He threw his left arm around Pearlie's face and stuck the point of the knife up against Pearlie's throat, whirling around until he was facing Smoke and Cal. Billy reached down and pulled Pearlie's pistol from his holster and stood next to him, pointing the gun at Cal and Smoke.
Are you boys sure you want to play it out this way?
We ain't got no choice, Jensen. I can't let you take us up into the mountains and freeze to death or be eaten by wild animals.
I guess you're right, son. It might be more humane just to kill you both now, so you'll die quick and easy.
I think you're forgetting who has the upper hand here, Jensen.
Smoke shrugged and glanced at Cal, who nodded grimly. Quick as a rattlesnake striking, Smoke and Cal drew their pistols. Pearlie reached up and fingered the thin red line on his throat where Kane's knife slid across it after he'd been hit.
Thought you boys was gonna jaw all night before you took them pine scum out.
He glanced down at Billy, noted the wound in his neck, and then he looked back over at Cal.
You a mite off on your aim there, Cal boy. Guess we're gonna have to see that you practice a bit more in the future.
Yeah, I was aiming for his heart, but I guess I rushed the shot a little since he already had his gun drawn and pointed.
You did mighty good, Cal, especially in knowing I wanted you to take the one with the gun instead of the one with the knife.
Yeah, I didn't see you pass no signals. So how'd you know which one to shoot, Cal? Well,
I knew Smoke would take the harder shot, so I took the easier one. Besides, I didn't want to risk hitting you instead of that bastard there, because I knew I'd never hear the end of it if I did.
You got that right.
Smoke pulled out the large bowie knife he carried in a scabbard on his belt and walked over to the dead bodies.
I think we ought to leave a little message for Mr. Pike now that these boys have forced our hand.
Bill Pike woke up just as the morning sun was peeking over the mountain peaks to the east. He climbed out of his blankets and noticed the fire had burned down to just coals. He walked over to the bundle of blankets that covered Rufus Gordon, and he kicked it with his boot.
Rufus, wake your lazy ass up and put some wood on that fire.
Oh, Bill, you know I can't hardly use my right hand. Get somebody else to do it.
I thought that doc over in Canyon City fixed your hand up pretty good.
He did, but the damn thing's so wrapped up I can't use my finger.
Must make picking your nose a real chore.
Hey, glad you spoke up, Hank. Just for that, you can get the wood for the fire instead of roof.
As Snow got slowly to his feet, Pike nudged Blackie Johnson with his boot.
Blackie, get up and fix us some coffee and breakfast before it's time for lunch.
While Hank Snow got the fire going, Blackie pulled the cooking utensils out of the bag on the back of one of the pack horses and began to make coffee and prepared to fry some bacon and boil some beans. He still had some biscuits he'd cooked the night before, and he put them on a pan near the fire to warm them up. The rest of the gang began to get their blankets and ground sheets folded and packed on their horses. Sally sat up in her blankets and held up her hand with the rope still tied to it.
If you take this off, I'll put my blankets on my horse.
Pike walked over, squatted down, and untied the knots in the rope.
Did you sleep well, Mrs. Jensen?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Pike. But I'll feel a lot better after some coffee.
Had coffee ready yet, Blackie?
Blackie nodded, poured some in a tin mug, and brought it over to Sally.
I'll have some biscuits and bacon and beans ready in about 5 minutes, Mrs. Jensen. And I'll get you some lard to smooth on that rash on your wrist.
Don't go getting too kindly to the lady, Blackie. It ain't gonna do you no good.
Blackie stared at Pike for a moment, Then he just shook his head and went back to the fire to finish cooking breakfast.
Where the hell are Billy and Sam?
Rufus Gordon sat up in his blankets and glanced around. Then he shrugged.
They ain't here yet, boss.
If those lazy bastards fell asleep on guard duty, I'm gonna kick their asses. Hank, you and Sarge go get them and bring them back here pronto.
As Snow and Rutledge walked off toward the two sentries' post, Pike squatted down, picked a piece of bacon out of the frying pan, and began to munch on it while he waited to see what was keeping the guards. A few minutes later, both Rutledge and Snow came running back into the camp, their faces pale and sweating in spite of the frigid temperatures of the morning air.
What is it? What's the matter with you two?
You better come over here and take a look for yourself.
Pike and the other men moved through the brush to the place where Sam Kane had been stationed. Lying on a boulder was a bloody scalp, two ears, and a tongue, arranged in a grotesque parody of a face on the bloody rock.
Jesus!
Sally Jensen pushed a couple of the men aside and stood before the boulder, a sympathetic look on her face for the dead man.
Oh, Mr. Pike, I believe you've now seen some of my husband's handiwork.
Ain't no white man done this. Must have been Injuns.
No, Mr. Pike, I'm afraid you're mistaken.
What do you mean?
In the first place, Indians wouldn't have left the scalps or the other trophies. And in the second place, if the Indians had killed your men, why do you think they would not have come into the camp and finished the rest of you off while you were sleeping?
What about Billy?
Worse than this. We better come look.
The entire group moved across the camp, breakfast forgotten, and approached the sentry post of Billy Gatsby. They found his entire head stuck on a pole in the ground, his eyes open and staring at him as if in reproach, his swollen tongue protruding from an obviously broken jaw. Pike whirled around and grabbed Sally by the shoulders.
What kind of man is your husband?
He is a man of the old school, Mr. Pike. An eye for an eye and all of that.
But we ain't harmed you none.
You kidnapped me against my will, Mr. Pike. And you killed two of our friends back at the ranch. That's enough for smoke. I'm afraid this is what you've all got to look forward to for what you've done.
Then it won't make any difference if I kill you now, will it?
Not in the end result, perhaps. You are all going to die. That is as certain as the fact that the sun will rise tomorrow. However, the manner in which you die will be determined by how you treat me.
Blackie Johnson stepped over and put his hand on Pike's arm.
Maybe we better listen to what she says, boss. If we kill her now, we won't have any hold over Jensen to make him come to us in Pueblo.
Blackie's right, Bill. I haven't waited all these years to be cheated out of my chance at Jensen because you get pissed off.
You get a second chance, Mrs. Jensen. But if that crazy husband of yours does something like this again, I'll make you suffer like you never even dreamed of.
Sally gave him a half smile and turned and made her way back to the camp, where she calmly poured herself another cup of coffee and sat there staring at the forgotten frying pan as the bacon strip slowly turned to charcoal. Smoke, who'd been watching the scene below from a vantage point on a ledge 1,500 yards up the mountain, gently let the hammer down on the Sharp's buffalo rifle he was holding. When Pike had put the pistol under Sally's chin, Smoke had drawn a bead on the man's head. He'd had that trigger half depressed when Pike lowered his gun, saving his life. Smoke knew how close he'd come to losing Sally, and the feeling made him weak with unaccustomed fear.
Time to back off for a while and let the situation simmer down.
As he moved down the mountain to where Cal and Pearly were waiting for him, he began to make plans for his meeting with the outlaws in Pueblo and how he was going to handle it. He knew it was going to take all of his skill to meet with Pike and not let the man get the upper hand. The main thing he had to do was to stall the kidnappers along until he could get Sally out from under their control, which meant he'd have to leave the rest of them alive until he could figure out a way to do that without getting her killed by the desperados. When he arrived back at the place where Cal and Pearly were holding the horses, he put the Sharps in its rifle boot and climbed into the saddle.
Did our little show have the desired effect?
It sure got them to thinking. Now here's what we're going to do when we get to Pueblo.
When he was finished explaining his plan, they rode off after the outlaws. As Pike led his men through mountain passes towards Pueblo, Colorado Territory, he began to leave two men a slight distance behind to watch their back trail. With what had happened to Sam and Billy, he now knew Smoke Jensen was in the vicinity, and he wasn't going to take any chances of Jensen sneaking up on them while they were riding. When they got close to the town of Pueblo, he checked a map he'd been given while in Utah by a man who used to mine the area. The man had told him of a played-out mining camp north of Pueblo up in the mountain range that had some shacks and a couple of old mine shafts that would be perfect for what Pike had in mind. The trail from Canyon City to Pueblo followed the course of the Arkansas River as it meandered southeast through the foothills of the mountains. The map indicated that just before reaching Pueblo, Pike should turn north and circle around the city until he came to a creek named Fountain Creek, which ran straight south toward Pueblo, where it then joined the Arkansas River. The deserted mining camp would be found about 5 miles north of the city on the banks of that creek. As the group of outlaws rode single file down the trail, their horses moving slowly as they plowed through knee-deep snow, Sally slowed her horse until she was abreast of Blackie Johnson. She'd picked him to talk to because of all the men in the gang, he seemed the least hostile toward her.
Mr. Johnson?
Johnson looked at her and nodded, but he didn't speak.
What was it you were saying back at the camp about the wanted poster on Smoke?
Bill has a poster we picked up in Utah. It says your husband is worth $10,000, dead or alive.
So, that's why you're riding with these men?
Mrs. Jensen, no matter what you think of us, we wouldn't be out here waiting for your husband to come so we can kill him if he didn't deserve it. Men don't get $10,000 rewards put on them if they haven't done some pretty bad things. We're regulators, not bandits.
Well, no matter what you call yourselves, there can't be a wanted poster out on Smoke. Smoke hasn't been wanted by the law for over 10 years. All of the posters were recalled years ago by the governor of the territory.
Are you sure about that?
Of course, I'm sure. Smoke is in no trouble with the law, Mr. Johnson, and hasn't been for some years. Think about it. With that much money at stake, you would have had to stand in line behind other bounty hunters to get Smoke if it was true. After all, we weren't exactly living in hiding in Colorado.
I'll admit, Mr. Jensen, I've been having my doubts. Thought it might be something like that. I couldn't figure why a man with such a price on his head would be living openly on a ranch in Colorado Territory so close to Utah.
That's simple. It's because he's not wanted, and he hasn't been for some time.
Well, that figures. Bill must have some other reason for coming after your husband. Something he didn't tell us about.
You really don't know what all this is about, do you?
No. The only reason Pike gave us was the money we'd make if we killed Jensen. Do you have any idea what's going on?
Yes. It seems some years ago, Smoke shot and killed Mr. Pike's brother, and he wounded his half-brother, Zeke. It must have been a severe wound, resulting in the problem he now has with his arm and leg.
So, all this is about him getting even with your husband for something he did to his family a long time ago?
Yes.
That son of a bitch just got Billy and Sam killed, and there isn't even going to be any money in it for us. I think I'll go call him on it right now.
No, Mr. Johnson. I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Why not?
Because you have no proof, other than my word. And I do not think the men will believe me.
You're right. These stupid galoots won't want to think they've come all this way for nothing.
And killed two innocent men, and gotten two of your friends killed. All because Mr. Pike and Mr. Thompson want revenge against my husband.
What do you suggest I do?
Bide your time, Mr. Johnson. Bide your time. Pike will give himself away sooner or later. And then you'll have the rest of the men with you, instead of against you, when you confront him.
That's sound advice, Mr. Jensen. I'm obliged.
Just before noon, Pike and his men came to the stream running north and south that he figured must be Fountain Creek. They turned north and rode for another 3 hours, and finally came to a collection of old, weather-beaten, clabbered cabins arranged in a semicircle on the banks of the river. There were well-worn paths from each of the houses down to the water's edge and to a pit dug in the middle of the open ground in between the cabins. There were even a couple of old privies that were still standing out behind the houses and away from the stream. Pike rode into the center of the small camp and got down off his horse.
This must be the place that old Miner told us about, boys. Get your gear together, see if any of these cabins are in good enough shape to bunk in.
Pike stood in the center of the open area among the houses and stared up at the mountains that rose on steep slopes on all sides of them.
Hank, while the boys unpack our supplies, why don't you take a ride on up the slope over there, see if you can find the mine entrance the old fool told us about.
All right, boss.
Snow jerked his reins around and walked his horse up the side of the mountain. Sergeant Rutledge came riding up with the other man Pike had assigned to watch their back trail.
All clear to the rear, boss. If anyone's following us, they're staying well back and out of sight.
Pike moved to a circular area in the middle of the open area where dozens of small stones were arranged around the fire pit about 2 feet deep.
All right, Sarge, take a couple men, gather up some wood for a fire. Blackie can fix us our noon meal while the rest of you unpack.
As the men bent to their tasks, Pike walked over to Sally and helped her down off her horse. Once she was on the ground, he untied the ropes he had around her wrists.
I'm gonna untie you, Ms. Jensen, but I warn you again. Don't try to escape or it'll go hard on you.
Why, where on earth would I go, Mr. Pike? I'd never find my way out of this wilderness by myself.
That's right, Mrs. Jensen. These mountains are no place for a woman on her own.
Sally bit her lip to keep from smiling. Truth was, with all Smoke had taught her about the high lonesome over the years, she was far better equipped to deal with the wilderness than any of these Flatlander pilgrims were. She followed Pike over to where Blackie Johnson was struggling to get a fire going with wood that was wet from the snow on the ground.
Mr. Johnson, if you use a little hatchet to split the wood open, you'll find it is dry on the inside and will make a much better fire. I'd start with some dry grass from up close to the trees where the snow hasn't gotten to it, and then use some pine cones on top of that. It'll make the fire start a lot easier.
You seem to know a lot about living in the open, Mrs. Jensen.
Cal and Pearlie, who'd been keeping pace with the outlaws by riding up higher in the mountains, had been surprised when the gang had made a turn to the north and headed away from Pueblo, where they were supposed to meet with Smoke. Smoke had circled around the men and rode hard to get to Pueblo ahead of the man he was supposed to meet there. He wanted to be waiting for him so he wouldn't know Smoke knew where his camp was. Cal and Pearlie, from their vantage point on a slope high above the outlaws' camp, watched the men unpack their supplies and settle into the cabins near the stream.
Looks like they're going to make this their camp.
Cal, who'd been watching Sally as she moved around the camp, nodded.
Yeah, they seem to be treating Miss Sally all right. At least they're giving her the run of the place and not keeping her tied up or anything.
They better not do her no harm, if they know what's good for them.
Yeah, we'll watch them a mite longer, and then you can ride on into town and tell Smoke where they're staying.
When Smoke followed the trail into the city of Pueblo, he was surprised at how much the town had grown. He'd been through the area years ago when he was riding with Preacher, but the town seemed to have tripled in size and population since then. Back when he and Preacher had passed through, Pueblo had been a sleepy little village built on the bank of the Arkansas River. Now the town straddled the river and was built up all along both sides of the slowly flowing body of water. The buildings weren't too close to the edge of the river, because in the spring, when the snow and ice in the mountains above and all around the city melted, the river would more than double in size and speed of flow. There was a wooden bridge built across the narrowest part of the river that allowed the inhabitants to move back and forth along both sides of it. Back when Smoke was first here, there had only been a flat raft that a couple of men pulled back and forth by means of a rope tied to trees on either side of the river. Smoke noticed there was now a fort occupying the north end of town. A sign on the periphery of the fort read, Fort Pueblo, and a small group of soldiers could be seen moving about within the confines of the structure.
They must be here to maintain order among the miners, since there hasn't been any trouble with the Indians for some years.
The town was fairly busy, but with a lot of the miners coming down from their mountain camps to gather up supplies for the winter before the snows blocked the passes down the town. Along with the miners was a conglomeration of the people that invariably congregated around men with too much money in their pockets and too little civilizing influences. Prostitutes, gamblers, footpads, thieves, and other assorted rowdy characters of an unsavory nature. Now all Smoke had to do was pick out a saloon out of the many that lined Court Street and grab himself a table. Today was the day he was supposed to meet the man who kidnapped Sally. He couldn't wait to look that bastard in the eyes. Back at the outlaws' camp, Bill Pike finished his meal and got to his feet. He checked his watch and then he looked out over the mountains, thinking. It was about time for him to head into Pueblo to meet with Smoke Jensen and discuss the present situation and just how they were going to deal with it. He realized he'd gotten himself between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, he and Zeke needed to get Smoke out of Pueblo so they could wreak their vengeance upon him for killing their kin. But, on the other hand, if he brought Smoke up here now, it was likely the other members of his band of cutthroats would soon learn that there was, in fact, no price on Smoke's head, and there was no telling how they'd react to the news that they'd come all this way without a $10,000 payday in the offing. If they'd killed Smoke at the ranch, it wouldn't have been as bad. He could have said anything to his men. Hell, he could have waited a day or two, pretended to go to the sheriff, and then come back and told his men that the poster had been recalled. Maybe a few would have raised a fuss, but he and Zeke could have handled that. And meanwhile, Smoke would have been dead. But now, after all this time, after all they'd been through, his men needed something more. A payday, and preferably a big one. The only way out of this quandary that Pike could see would be to put Smoke off another day and then have Smoke meet him and Zeke somewhere else with the promise to trade Mrs. Jensen for money. Hopefully, that would put Jensen's suspicions to rest, and at the meeting, Zeke and Pike could kill the son of a bitch. When Zeke got in touch with Pike with the idea of getting revenge on Smoke Jensen for killing their brother and crippling Zeke, Pike had began his search for where Smoke might be living now. As famous as Smoke was, it didn't take Pike long to discover his whereabouts in Big Rock, Colorado. He'd also discovered that Smoke Jensen had become both respectable and rich. Pike thought he saw a way out of his predicament. He'd have Jensen wire the bank at Big Rock and have a letter of credit wired to the bank at Pueblo for $10,000 as ransom for his wife. After he and Zeke killed Jensen, Pike would simply tell the men that they had killed Smoke, taken his body to Pueblo, and gotten the $10,000 reward as he'd promised. That should satisfy the men as far as the money was concerned. And to make them even happier, once he and Zeke were done with Smoke, he would give the men Mrs. Jensen as an added prize to make up for the hardships they'd faced in the frigid weather. He could then sweeten the pot by arranging to use the men to rob some of the miners in the area and make enough money to enable them to live for years on the proceeds of this little trip. This seemed to Pike like the best way to keep everyone happy and for him and Zeke to get the revenge they craved against Jensen. On the way into Pueblo, he would keep a sharp lookout for a place suitable for the meeting with Jensen. It would have to be isolated and yet easy enough to describe to the man so he could find it the next day.
All right, men, gather around. Blackie, take Mrs. Jensen to one of those cabins and tie her up good and tight. We got some business to discuss.
Blackie nodded and walked over to help Sally to her feet. He led her to the cabin he'd put his things in. Pike looked around at his men.
Boys, I'm going to go into Pueblo and see if Jensen showed up like I told him to in that letter we left at his ranch. If he's there, I'll get him to come back to camp with me by promising to let him go if he pays us for his wife.
What's gonna happen when he gets here?
I will kill him, of course, and then take his body to the nearest marshal's office and collect our $10,000 reward.
Rufus Gordon rubbed the bandages on his ruined hand, hate filling his eyes.
And what's gonna happen to that bitch which shot off my fingers after we're done with Jensen?
I guess that'll be up to you boys. Cold as it is up here, maybe you can figure out some way for her to keep you warm for a spell.
Rufus jerked a long-bladed knife out of a scabbard on his belt and held it up.
That's fine with me, so long as I get her when everybody else is through with her. I owe her big for what she done to my hand.
Ruf, personally, I don't give a damn what you do with her after we've gotten Jensen. But until that happens, she's not to be touched.
Why not, boss? If we're gonna kill the son of a bitch anyway.
Because I don't know if Jensen will agree to come into camp unless he sees that she's all right first. We may have to show her to him to get him in here.
Oh, I never thought of that.
That's why I do the thinking for this group, Sarge. Now, you boys get the camp straightened up. Try to get some fires going in those stoves in the cabins. I don't want to freeze my ass off tonight when I get back.
As the men left the fire and moved toward the cabins, Pike pulled Zeke to the side and explained his plan to him in low tones so no one else would overhear. Zeke's eyes glittered with anticipated bloodlust.
I can't wait to get my hands on that bastard Bill. I'm gonna make sure he's a long time dying.
Me too, Zeke.
Pike swung up into his saddle and walked the horse down the trail toward Pueblo. About halfway to the town, Pike came to a bend in Fountain Creek, and he saw a clearing on the other side of the stream with a ramshackle cabin in it that was leaning heavily to one side as if it were about to fall down.
It's a good place to tell Jensen to meet me tomorrow. He won't have no trouble finding it. It's far enough away from the camp so the boys won't hear any gunshots when we take Jensen out.
Going over in his mind what he was going to tell Jensen, and just how much money he should ask for to make the man think the ransom demand was on the level, Pike moved down the trail toward Pueblo, thinking how damn clever he was. After walking up and down Court Street a couple of times, Smoke decided to enter a saloon named the Dog Hole. As was his usual custom when Smoke first pushed through the bat wings, he immediately stepped to one side with his back against the wall and his right hand hanging near his pistol butt. He let his eyes become accustomed to the relatively dark room while he looked over the occupants of the 15 or so tables scattered around the place. He saw no familiar faces from his past, and so he walked slowly to the bar, where he took up station at the end nearest another wall. He never stood with his back to the room or where other people were sitting behind him. It was a habit that had saved his life on more than one occasion, and the practice had become second nature to him now. The bartender ambled over, wiping out a glass with a dirty-looking cloth rag, as bartenders always seem to be doing.
What can I get you?
Shot of whiskey with a beer chaser.
When the man bent over and pulled out a bottle with no label on it, Smoke held up his hand.
I don't want that. Give me some of the good stuff off the back shelf.
It'll cost you extra.
That's not a problem.
The barman turned and took a dusty bottle off the rear shelf with a label that read Old Kentucky on it. Smoke doubted if any part of that bottle or the liquor within had ever been within 1,000 miles of Kentucky, but he kept his mouth shut. The bartender pulled the cork and slapped a glass down in front of Smoke that was so dirty it was almost black. Just as the man started to pour, Smoke put his hand over the rim of the glass.
You're not appreciate a clean glass.
Am I gonna have trouble with you, mister?
The man pulled a 3-foot-long wooden stake that was 3 inches in diameter from under the bar.
The only trouble you're gonna have is trying to take a shit with that pole stuck up your ass.
Why, you...
You want to get that glass, or do I pull this trigger and decorate the mirror behind you with what little brains you have?
When the barman looked into Smoke's eyes, he knew he was seconds away from death, and his bladder let loose.
Oh,
all.
What the hell's going on here?
Smoke holstered his pistol and smiled nicely at the heavyset man who was approaching behind the bar. The man had salt and pepper hair and a dark mustache whose ends hung down to the bottom of his chin. But his eyes were the blue of wildflowers and seemed to shine with amusement at the barman's state.
This here man's causing some trouble, Mr. Gooch.
Is that true, mister?
Smoke inclined his head at the dirty glass in front of him.
All I did was request the good whiskey and a clean glass. If that's too much for this establishment, I'll be happy to take my business elsewhere.
I've told you about this before, Jack. Now get out. You're fired.
But...
Oh, no buts, you lazy shit. Get out, and you can come back later for what I owe you.
After Jack left, carefully holding his hands in front of his stained pants, Gooch turned back to Smoke, shaking his head.
Damn. It's the gold fever.
Oh?
Yeah. Every able-bodied man is not afraid of a little work is out in the mountains digging for gold. What's left in town for me to hire are the ones too lazy to work or who are looking to steal what they need instead of earning it.
I've seen it before.
Gooch took the glass and replaced it with a clean one.
This one's on the house because of the trouble with my man. But you're going to have to pay for the next one.
Pour two and I'll treat you to one.
Damn, I don't get an offer like that too often.
He poured himself a drink and held up his glass to Smoke.
Happier days.
I'll drink to that.
Smoke glanced at the sign over the bar.
I like the name of your place. It indicates an owner with a sense of humor.
Well, my name's Homer Gooch. Growing up with a name like that, you either have to learn to be a good fighter or have a good sense of humor. I ain't much of a fighter, but I don't mind the occasional laugh at my expense.
That's a sound philosophy.
What's your handle, mister?
Smoke Jensen.
The Smoke Jensen?
The only one I know of.
Old Jack would have shit himself in addition to pissing himself if he'd known who he braced with that little stick he kept under the bar. What brings you to our neck of the woods, Mr. Jensen? You're not about to try your hand at mining, are you?
Call me Smoke, and no, I'm not here looking for gold. I'm supposed to meet someone here today.
A friend?
Not exactly.
Gooch shook his head and glanced at the 5-foot-long mirror behind the bar.
Well, Smoke, if it comes down to gunplay, would you try not to hit that mirror? It cost me $200 to have it shipped here from St. Louis.
I'll do my best, Homer.
Well, I bet you'll be wanting a table in a corner so you can keep your eye on the door, am I right?
Yes.
I'll send a bottle over, Smoke.
No thanks, Homer. I need to keep a clear head.
Well, how about I fill a whiskey bottle with sarsaparilla? It looks like whiskey, but it won't get you drunk.
Hell of a good idea, Homer. I'm obliged.
Just remember to miss the mirror, and we'll call it even.
Smoke settled into his chair in the saloon, sipping his sarsaparilla and smoking an occasional cigarette as he waited for Pike or one of his men to show up. He had the hammer thong on his Colts undone, just in case whoever showed up started blasting instead of talking. Smoke had no illusions. He knew Pike's ultimate desire was to see him dead. And Sally, she was just an instrument in that final outcome. Smoke's problem was to try and avoid killing Pike or his men until Cal and Pearlie could report back to him as to where they were keeping her. He refused to entertain any thoughts that she might already be dead or injured. After a while, Homer Gooch walked over to the table.
Smoke, you haven't told me exactly what's going on here, but if you need some backup, I'll be over there, behind the bar, with a 10-gauge sawed-off express gun handy. You give the word, and I'll blast the shit out of anyone giving you trouble.
Thanks, Homer. I don't think that'll be necessary. But I appreciate the thought and the help.
Gooch nodded and made his way back behind the bar, where he leaned on it, his eyes searching the room for possible trouble. Smoke smiled to himself at the man's offer. He discovered over the years that once people found out who he was, they generally reacted in one of two ways. They either feared him and tended to avoid his company, or they liked what they'd heard about him and wanted to be friends and help him out if they could. Such was both the penalty and the benefit of being a celebrity among common folks. The Dog Hole was the fourth saloon Bill Pike entered while searching for Smoke Jensen. He'd never laid eyes on the man before, but he thought he'd probably recognize him when he saw him. He walked into the Dog Hole and stepped up to the bar.
Give me whiskey.
A heavy-set man behind the counter poured him his drink. He turned, and his eyes darted around the room. He knew Smoke immediately when his eyes fell on the man sitting at the corner table.
Damn, he's a dangerous-looking son of a bitch.
Several inches over 6 feet tall, with shoulders as wide as an axe handle, Smoke dressed in buckskins. Smoke was in his 40s, but his hair was still coal black, like his eyes, and there wasn't a trace of softness about his body. Muscles bulged in his forearms where they rested on the table, and his expression looked as if he were cast in stone.
You looking for somebody, mister?
Yeah, but I think I just found him.
As Pike walked towards Smoke, Homer Gooch got Smoke's attention and winked, pointing under the bar to indicate the shotgun was ready and waiting if Smoke got into trouble. Pike stopped in front of Smoke's table and stared down at him.
You Jensen?
Yeah. Are you Pike?
Pike nodded and pulled out a chair across the table from Smoke. He pushed his empty glass across the table.
How about a refill?
Get your own whiskey. This isn't a social call.
Pike's face paled slightly at the insult, but he turned his head and waved to Gooch.
Another bottle of whiskey over here?
After Gooch had delivered one of the cheap bottles with no label on it, Pike filled his glass.
You call this meeting, Pike. Say your piece.
You talking awful brave for a man who's lost his wife?
I didn't lose her, you scum. You and your men took her.
Nevertheless, we got her and you don't. You want her back?
Oh, I'm going to get her back, Mr. Pike. There's no doubt about that. The only question is how you and your men are going to die. Slow and painful, or fast and easy?
Oh, now that ain't no way.
Make your offer, Pike. I assume that's what you came here for.
You can have her back, unharmed and untouched, for $10,000.
That's all you want?
I figure you can go to the bank here and have a letter of credit wired from your bank in Big Rock. Once you have the money in hand, we can make the trade and nobody has to get hurt.
Smoke pretended to think the offer over for a few minutes, slowly sipping a sarsaparilla and staring at Pike.
Oh, I know all about your reputation, Jensen. And if you're as good as they say you are, you may be able to take out me and my men like you're thinking you can. But in the process of doing all this, your wife is bound to get hurt, maybe even killed.
There is some truth in what you say.
From what I hear, you won't have any trouble raising the money.
The money is no problem. I'm just trying to figure out how we can make the trade so everyone's happy and no one gets the idea of taking the money and not delivering my wife to me.
Hey, we know how dangerous you are, Jensen. And since there's only three of us, we wouldn't stand a chance against you if we went back on the deal.
Smoke smiled. He knew Pike had at least 7 or 8 men left in his gang and was lying through his teeth. But Pike didn't know he knew this. Smoke got to his feet.
Come on with me. Homer, save my table for me, would you?
Yes, sir.
Smoke walked down the street about 50 yards and entered a building with a sign on it that read Pueblo Bank. He walked up to a teller and asked to see the manager. A few minutes later, a portly man dressed in a black suit and boiled white shirt with a string tie walked out of his office.
I'm Jedediah Morgan. What can I do for you, gentlemen?
Smoke handed him a piece of paper.
I'm Smoke Jensen from Big Rock, Colorado. I own the bank there. I want you to wire the bank for a letter of credit for $10,000, plus whatever fee you charge for the transfer. I want to pick up the money tomorrow morning.
Why, yes, sir, Mr. Jensen. That should be no problem at all.
Smoke turned on his heel without another word, walked back to the Dog Hole, and sat at his same table. Pike remained standing on the other side of the table.
As you can see, I'll have the money tomorrow morning. How do you want to handle the trade?
There's a small clearing about 3 miles up Fountain Creek. It has an old cabin in it. I'll meet you there at noon tomorrow. Bring the cash. My men will be out in the woods with your wife. Any sign of a double cross, and they'll put a bullet between her eyes before you can sneeze.
I'll need to see her and see that she's all right before I turn the money over.
Of course. I wouldn't want you to take my word for it.
See you tomorrow, Pike.
So long.
Oh, Pike.
Yeah?
Best say your prayers tonight that I find Sally in perfect shape. If one hair on her head is out of place, you'll find yourself begging me to kill you before I'm through with you.
Pike tried to grin as he turned and walked out the door, but his stomach knotted at the expression on Smoke's face. He was looking death in the eye as sure as he was standing there. He felt sweat break out under his armpits and on his forehead, and he began to wonder if his dead brother was worth all this trouble. Hell, he hadn't been lying to Mrs. Jensen when he said he hadn't particularly liked the bastard anyway. If it weren't for Zeke and his damn big mouth, he wouldn't be up here in this godforsaken frozen country worrying about getting his ass shot off. A few minutes after Pike left the dog hole, the bat wing swung open and Pearly walked in. He took one look around the place and began to move directly towards Smoke. Evidently, his rather disheveled appearance, the way he wore his pistol tied down low on his right leg, and his determined expression worried Homer Gooch. Homer pulled the sawed-off shotgun from under the bar and rested it on top, his eyes watching Pearly for any false moves. Smoke grinned and waved at Homer.
It's all right, Homer. This one's a friend of mine.
Homer relaxed and put the shotgun away. He raised his eyebrows and pointed at the good bottle of whiskey Smoke had been drinking from when he first arrived. Smoke nodded, and he waited for Pearly to take a seat across the table from him. After Pearly sat down, he looked around the room and smiled.
This place is right nice. When I saw the name on the sign outside, I thought it was going to be a dive.
Yeah, Mr. Gooch has quite a sense of humor.
The saloon was large and well lighted with fresh paint on the walls, and the floor was clean and well swept. The tables were placed so that everyone had plenty of room to move around without being too crowded. In one corner, a piano sat facing the room with several bar stools in front of it. There was no one playing presently, and Smoke figured it was used mainly at night. Another thing he liked was that there were no saloon girls hanging around to cadge drinks from the miners who frequented the place. It was just another indication of Mr. Gooch's class.
Did you find their camp?
Yep. Cal's got them all staked out now. He'll tail them if they try to move.
Homer stepped up to the table and put the whiskey bottle down in the center of the table, along with a glass for Pearly. He picked up the bottle of rotgut Pike had left behind and the bottle of sarsaparilla, and he grinned.
Wouldn't want you gentlemen to get sick drinking this horse piss.
Thanks, Homer. Owe you one for all you've done.
It's the least I could do, Smoke.
What about Sally? Did you see her? Is she all right?
She seems right as rain, Smoke. They're camped in this clearing that has five or six old cabins scattered around. Well, they got her stashed in one most of the time, but they seem to be leaving her alone and not bothering her none. They let her out to eat with them when they have a meal, but they make her sit off to one side by herself.
So they don't leave anyone in the cabin with her as a guard?
No. At least they didn't the night I watched them bed down. I think they must tie her up to the bed or to a post in there or something, because when she comes out, she's usually rubbing her wrists like maybe they were raw from the ropes.
That's good for us. That'll make it easier for us to get her out of there without them realizing it and starting to throw lead around.
I noticed that big man coming out of here when I was coming in. I seen him out at the camp yesterday, and think he must be the head honcho out there because everyone listens when he talks.
Yeah, that's Bill Pike, brother to the Pike I killed years ago. He and his half-brother named Thompson are the cause of this mess.
You know, Smoke, there's only about 8 or 9 of them galoots out at the camp. You, me, and Cal lined them up in our sights, we could probably get them all before they knew what was happening.
No, Pearly. I don't want to do that way for 2 reasons. One, we might miss and give him time to hurt Sally. 2, that'd be too easy for these bastards. I don't want to just kill them. I want to make their lives miserable with fear before I let the hammer down on them and end it all.
Just as Smoke finished talking, Pearly's stomach growled loudly, causing Smoke to break out in a wide grin.
Sounds like you're a mite hungry, partner.
Yeah,
cattle, and I didn't want to risk building a fire while we watched those assholes, so about all we've had for 2 days has been old cold biscuits and water.
Well, I can fix that. Hey, Homer, you got a good place to eat in this town?
You bet, Smoke. The Shorthorn Diner right down the street has the best steaks this side of the mountains.
While Smoke and Pearly ate their late lunch, with Pearly, of course, eating enough for two men, they discussed Smoke's plans for the outlaws.
After we finish eating, I want you to buy an extra horse with a saddle and all the gear to take up to the mountain with us.
Pearly looked puzzled.
We may need it for Sally. When I take her out of the gang's camp, I may not have time to get her horse, and she'll need it to ride out on.
What about the pack horse we got up there?
It doesn't have a saddle on it, and we may need it for our supplies. Besides, we may lose a horse in the battle, and it's always better to have too many horses than not enough, especially up in High Lonesome in the winter.
Pearly nodded as he continued to stuff food into his mouth as if he hadn't eaten in weeks instead of just 2 days.
Now, Pike is expecting me to meet him at noon tomorrow at a small clearing a few miles up Fountain Creek, but we're not going to wait that long. As soon as you finish your meal and get the horse for Sally, we're going to head up there and get Cal.
Don't let me forget to take him some food with us.
All right. But we're going to be plenty busy setting up some surprises for those bastards. I'm going to use some supplies you and Cal brought for me to set some traps on the trails around their camp and up on the slopes up above it. As soon as Sally's safely away from them, I'm going to show them just how stupid they were to mess with us.
Damn right.
As he rode back toward his camp, Pike kept looking back over his shoulder. His meeting with Smoke Jensen had spooked him pretty bad. He didn't think he'd ever met anyone who looked as downright dangerous as the mountain man. He'd recalled stories he'd heard about Jensen back when he was tracking him down in preparation for his revenge. Stories of how he'd dealt with men who'd crossed him. Stories that made a man's blood run cold. As he thought about this, his mind went back to the bloody scalp and the pieces of Sam Kane's face that someone had left for him as a warning. Now he had no doubt it had been done by Smoke Jensen. He knew he was riding a thin line, and if he made one false step, Jensen would exact a terrible retribution. He was going to have to make sure he and his men were on their guard at all times, or they would never live to spend the money Jensen was getting together. When he finally got back to the camp, he saw Mrs. Jensen sitting near the fire. Her expression turned away from Hank Snow, who was standing next to her. Mrs. Jensen's expression was shocked, and her face was blushing a bright red. From the stiffness of her back and neck, Pike knew something was wrong. He got down off his horse and walked rapidly over to the couple. As he got there, Snow turned and gave him a smirk.
What's going on here?
Sally cut her eyes at him, and then she looked away as if he didn't deserve her attention.
I was just telling this little lady what I plan to do to her after we kill her husband.
Has he been bothering you, Mrs. Jensen?
What do you think, Mr. Pike? He is an animal, and no matter what happens to my husband, he will have to kill me before I will allow him to lay a hand on me.
You stupid bastard! Didn't I tell you to leave Mrs. Jensen alone?
Snow grimaced in pain, and his hand went toward his gun on his hip. Pike drew and pointed his pistol at the man's face.
Go on, Hank. Just give me one more reason to blow your fool head off.
Snow slowly moved his hand away from his gun.
Oh, Jesus, boss, I didn't mean nothing by it. I was just having a little fun with her, is all.
Pike looked up at the man who gathered around to see the fight.
Let this be a lesson to you. I'm still the ramrod of this outfit, and anyone who crosses me is going to get this or worse.
When no one said anything, Pike holstered his pistol and took Sally by the arm, helping her to her feet.
Why don't you get into your cabin and I'll have someone bring you some coffee, Mrs. Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Pike.
What's the problem, boss? Why are you treating her with kid gloves all of a sudden?
Because she's worth $10,000 to us, Roof. If she's hurt or messed up, Jensen ain't gonna take the bait.
Oh.
I just met with him in Pueblo. I convinced him we just wanted some money and we'd let her go.
That's a good idea, boss.
He's gonna get the money from the bank tomorrow. Meet me at a place about halfway here from Pueblo at noon.
How much money are we talking about?
$10,000.
Holy shit! That means with the reward money, we'll be getting $20,000.
Pike decided now was the time to break the bad news about the reward to the men before they found out about it on their own.
There's not gonna be any reward, boys.
What?
That's right. While I was in Pueblo, I checked with the sheriff's office. Found out that wanted poster was recalled some years ago. But the good news is, we're gonna be getting it anyway. The only difference is, it's gonna be coming out of Jensen's own bank.
This last seemed to mollify the men.
I think this news deserves a drink. What do you say?
The men grinned, their anger of a moment before forgotten, and they all went to get their bottles of whiskey. Any excuse for a drink was a good excuse to them. Once they all had their bottles in their hands, Pike held his up and gave a toast.
To $10,000 and what it can buy.
And to the little lady over there, and all the fun we're gonna have with her after we kill her man.